Thanks, Steve. I'm Jimmy Powers over alcohol. I'm extremely grateful to be here and extremely grateful to see all of you here. And now I don't get mad no more. I learned how to get even. It's more fun that way. But I got sober up in Syracuse, New York. That's our hometown. And I know I don't look like or act like a Yankee, but I really was. And remember one of my very first meetings, about a week after I came in the program, someone took me to what they call a speaker's meeting. It was the basement of a Lutheran church. And when I got down there, there were quite a few people, and the speaker was a Catholic priest. And he kind of woke me up to the program. He says, "How ironic this AA program is." He says, "Here I am, a Catholic priest, trying to get sober in the basement of a Protestant church." And it was true. And it's just amazing how we can all come together. I don't know who or how any of us come into this AA program that you're none of my business. The fact is that we got here. And you know, we have to rely on honesty and faith in one another. I never saw any one of you in this room ever take a drink, and I know none of you ever saw me take one. And yet we identify with one another because of the alcoholism. And they say, wonder how this program works. Well, there's many ways. One of the strongest facets is the fact that one drunk can identify with the other. No matter who comes into that room, brand new, I don't know if they just crawled out of the weeds or if they just got out of a halfway house or if they're still managing a corporation. Inside, if they're alcoholic like I am, inside I know exactly how they feel. And that's one of the reasons this program works, because we all understand one another. It's more than just book learning of how someone might feel or act or react to alcoholism. We understand that. There's that one up to Cedartown with Claude. Claude spoke up there and did a magnificent job, and they have an ITU unit up there. It's a recovery unit. And you know, just passing on what we learn in these rooms is so gratifying and it's so spiritual. And it's many people you'll hear now and then in your program, somebody will say, "Boy, I feel so good about my sobriety. I wish there was some way I could pay it back. How do I pay it back?" Well, we don't pay back in this AA program. We're not expected to. But we do pass it on. It's maybe not be an obligation to you, but to me it is. And Claude did a wonderful job, and he started going around talking to different places. You've got to hear him now and then. I know when he first came in, he didn't know if he was an alcoholic or not, but he sure knew he was allergic to it, because every time he drank, he broke out in a drunk. But that's Claude. And you know, everyone else in this room, we have our own identity. And that's why it's important that each and every one of us get heard now and then in the rooms. And that I always say, when I'm at an AA meeting, you know, I've been around quite a few years, and I will sit and listen. I try to listen to each and every one in these rooms. And you know, they talk about, labeling somebody or judging somebody, and we don't have to do that in life. You know, a person, by what they say and how they act, tells you how they are. And so our outside actions, which are results of our inner thinkings, our inner thoughts, is exactly who we are. Everyone has a character. One guy's a good guy, one guy's a bad guy, one guy's benevolent, one guy's cheap. What I'm trying to say is, no matter what, whether it be good, bad, or otherwise, someone lets me know how they are, the same as I let them know how I am. And so, if you don't like the type of character you are, we have to change our thinking. And that's what's important about this AA program. Because if we come in here and just put down the drink a day at a time, I don't care if it's a week, a month, a year, or 5 years. If all I did was put down the drink a day at a time, then that's all I've done, is stop drinking. All I've done is stop drinking. And that's not so bad. This guy's been a big help to me. Sobriety to me, would you give that a chair, please? Now if I fall down, no. Sobriety to me, my friends, and listen close, is not drinking a day at a time. Wait, that's just not drinking. Sobriety to me is not drinking a day at a time in absence of inner turmoil. You know, a lot of people don't understand, and I didn't at first when I came in this AA program. This is more than just not drinking. AA, if we attach ourselves to the program, this is a program of increase. This is a program of abundance. This is a program of victory. And we have to understand that. The only way I can attain that after I put down the drink a day at a time is to engender into the program, which is a spiritual program. And many don't want to hear that word. Well, maybe you'd rather sit in the saloons. I don't know. But it makes a difference to me, because once I understood that I had to do something other than just stop drinking. Why? Because this is the most common sense thing in the world. The same mind that drinks will always want to drink, even without a drink. The same mind without a drink will always want to have a drink. The same mind without a drink will never be comfortable in these AA rooms. Why? Because it's the alcoholic mind. You can't come in and just put down a drink and say this is it. Well, you know, I got a job and I didn't kick the dog and I still, it's the same mind. The same mind that drank will always want to drink. The same mind will never be comfortable in his room. And knowing that I'm an alcoholic, knowing that I need a program, and not engendering into it, is what I call a double-minded person. To be sitting in these rooms, wishing I was in the saloon, or sitting in the saloon knowing I should be in the AA rooms, is a double-minded person. So someone has to make a decision. They have to make it right away. And so that's what's important. And I learned right away. Someone said, well, what do you mean by spirituality? Just what the hell is it, you know? And it's important to understand that. Because spirituality is a we've often heard that we must die to live. We must be reborn. And what we're calling about is reborn in thought. You know, alcoholic thinking is a state of mind. I mean, it comes with the drink, and the drink comes with that state of mind. And as long as I'm in that same state of mind, I remember hearing a lot of people, you know, after they've been in these rooms a few weeks or a month or something, say, well, I still go out with the guys, and I go in the saloon, but I order a Pepsi. You know, still in the same state of mind, still hanging around the same joints, the same type of people, doing the same thing. That's the alcoholic mind. That's the mind that will never be comfortable. And so that's the mind that really brought us here. I go to many prisons and penitentiaries and places like that. My alumni, you know, when you write them back. And one thing I say, listen close to this, if this doesn't make sense to you, I tell them, guys, and sometimes I go to the women's prison and tell them, I say, if you leave here with the same mind that brought you here, by leaving, I mean your parole, you finish your bid or whatever, if you leave here with the same mind that brought you here, you're going to come back. You have to change that mind. You have to take on a new and different mind, the spiritual aspect of life. And so, I've often thought that the mind that creates the problems in life, and how many problems do we've accumulated when we were drinking out there? That mind that creates those problems is not smart enough to solve them. It wouldn't have created them in the first place. It takes a new and different mind. It takes a new and different mind. And I'm pretty strong on this. I don't know why, because I work with a lot of people. And I had a fellow with me up in New York about 7 years sober. He said he was. And he says, Jimmy, my sponsor moved out to California. We still talked on the phone a little bit. Locally, he wanted to know if I would sponsor. And I said, well, why don't you meet with me sometime and we'll talk. And we sat down to talk, and I'd seen this guy in the rooms quite a few years, you know. And he sounded like he had a pretty good program. But the first question I asked him, I says, is, do you believe your power is sober alcohol? He says, Jimmy, what are you talking about? I got 7 years. I says, do you believe your power is sober alcohol? I have to hear it from him, because if I don't hear it from him, anything beyond that could go to waste if he doesn't think he's powerless. How many times at meetings do we hear about people who've gone back out, and sometimes they get back in these rooms? When they come back in the room, they talk about, well, you know, I got angry at my wife or my husband, or I got fired from my job, or this and that. Usually something so they thought that a drink would be very soothing. How quick we forget, you know, a drink would really do me some good. So what I'm trying to say, number one, is I still see value in the alcohol. Do you still see value in the drink? If you do, you'll probably drink again. Do you still see value in it? If there's value in it for you, you'll probably return to it. But, you know, the thing is so many said, I've heard this too. You know, they haven't been around quite a while. Well, I thought I could take a drink. I thought I could have one. In other words, I didn't think I was alcoholic. I didn't. Now, when I came to the AA program, and I listened to you people, the first few days, when my mind cleared up over there, I heard about the DWIs. Up north we call it like it is, driving while intoxicated. But DWIs, I heard about those who slept in the weeds. I heard about those who went to rehabs. I heard about God loving people who needed mental problems, all because of alcohol. And on those who went to jail and those who didn't. And I heard some people say, well, you know, I never lost a job because of alcoholism. I'm still with my wife and kids, and I'm still functioning fine. So I didn't think I was alcoholic. Listen to this. What they're telling me, and what you probably told your own self like I did myself, is my conception of what an alcoholic is. I never drank in the morning. Until the last 3 months before I got here. But I never needed a drink in the morning. Well, I mean, I didn't need it. I never walked around with a bottle. That's what they are in New York. I don't walk around with a bottle in my hip pocket. I never, you know, because I didn't think I was alcoholic. Once in a great while I'd say, I'm not going to drink today or tonight. And I wouldn't. Oh, man, I got it made. I'm not alcoholic. You see, my idea or my conception of what an alcoholic is. Well, listen to this. I said in the beginning, I'm Jimmy, I'm powerless over alcohol. I didn't say I was alcohol, but I am. You know why I know I am? Because that's what they named powerlessness. They named it alcoholism. They didn't name it beerism. No, they didn't name it liquorism. They didn't name it drunkenness. They named it alcoholism, because alcohol is in liquor, beer, wine, and whatever. You know, some guy said, well, I didn't know if I was alcoholic, so I switched my drinks from beer to whiskey or from whiskey to wine. Well, switching drinks to an alcoholic is like switching seats on the Titanic. No matter what you drink, you're still going to go down if it's got alcohol in it. That's why we call it alcoholism. But the problem is, my friend, if I don't identify, if I never got a DUI or a DWI, if I never went to the penitentiary, if I never had any of the problems that you people have, well, maybe I'm not alcoholic. You know, I get drunk and I raise hell and this. Maybe I'm not an alcoholic. You see, I'm trying to identify with what I think an alcoholic is. But not one of us in this room can deny the fact, if you're alcoholic, that you are not powerless over that first drink. I take one drink and I can't predict the outcome. I take one drink and it consumes me. And I get that warm glow. I get that feeling. I take one drink with the intention of only having one or two. You can't leave the joint until the bartender like says, come on, you gotta go, man. It's over with. The day is the night's over. So that's alcohol. That's the powerlessness. I can't predict what my mind is going to do. It becomes changed as soon as I take a drink. It changes itself. That's the powerlessness. So when I tell you that I'm Jimmy, I'm powerless over alcohol, you know what I'm doing? I'm doing the very first important thing that I must do in this AA program, because in all the wisdom and spiritual guidance, when these steps were written, that first step, first part of the very first step says, we admitted we were alcoholic. No, don't. It says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. So let that sink in. That's important that we don't admit. I mean, I'm alcoholic. That's what they mean, powerlessness. I'm not denying I'm alcoholic. But the exact nature of my illness is the powerlessness over the first drink. Exact nature. So kind of rethink whether you think you're alcoholic or not, and understand the fact that you're powerless. That's what's important. Now, we got better. I said another thing. I said, I'm Jimmy, I'm powerless over alcohol, and I'm extremely grateful to be here. Did you know this new way of thinking, this new life that we put down the drink a day at a time, this sobriety, as I call it, has its own rules and regulations. In other words, it has its own spiritual laws. And if I violate those laws, I'm back into human thinking. And if I attach myself or I start working harmonious with the spiritual laws, I have a harmonious life. Did you know that when Rich read the promises, he said, these are the promises. Now, wait a minute. I bet you a good few of us sitting here thinking when they hear the promises, they're really, to them, the wishes, or they're the hopes, or they're the desires, or they're the maybes. Or if I go and get one or two of them. No, they're the promises. This program says the promise. Spirituality doesn't lie. It is the absolute truth. If they're promised to us, how come we don't all get them right away? Because we must grow into them spiritually. But if we grow into them spiritually, we will end up with every one of these. Every one. Well, they wouldn't be promised to us. So if you want a new and better life, a life of abundance, grow into the promises. But you can only do it through spiritual growth. You're not going to get it through that human mind. You know, our own best thinking. When you're the first thing you do is try to get a sponsor. In other words, get a leader. Get somebody to lead you around for a while, anyway. Because they know the mind you come in with isn't too satisfying to the general public. And that's it to me. And it wasn't for me. Gratitude. You know what gratitude is? It's a spiritual concept. It's part of the spiritual law. And once you become grateful, don't say you're grateful. Be grateful. Be grateful for any little thing you have or even don't have. You know, as somebody said to me once, I was up in a rehab, and they said, how can I be grateful? When I leave here, I don't have a home, I don't have a family, I don't have any money, I don't have nothing. I said, see this? And I reached in my pocket, and I pulled out a dime. That's a dime. I wish it so quick, because it's probably all I got in there. That's a dime. But this is all you got in life. Be grateful. Because you know what? If you want to double that dime to 20 cents, and eventually make it 50 cents, or a dollar, $100, $500, if you're not grateful, how can that happen? You see, gratitude is a launching pad for increase. If I'm not grateful for what I've got, I don't deserve anything more. If I'm not grateful for this dime, and this is my starting point, my launching pad, I don't care if family has left me. I'm not saying I don't care. I'm not saying it don't affect me. I don't care if I lost my job. See, I came in here zilch. I don't know about any of you, but we probably did, and feeling maybe even worse than I did, but we all come in feeling pretty much the same. I come in here after serving 9 years of a 40-year prison sentence in Attica State Prison up in New York. And I went 31 years and change on parole. I had nothing. Nothing. I had a family, but my wife had divorced me when I went away and took my baby and moved to California. But I had my brothers and sisters and lovely children. But, you know, I had nothing. But I learned about gratitude, and I started being grateful. I started being grateful every bit of every day. And it started to increase. It started to, in a sense, develop into a new and better life. Because if I'm not grateful for what I have, and I don't deserve anything more, I'll lose what I've got. If you're not grateful for something, you're going to lose it. We have to learn to be grateful. But grateful, gratitude, the launching pad for increase. Isn't this an awareness right away that makes you want to get into the spiritual part of the AA program? And just sit there cursing for what you don't have? You said, I've only got a dime, where the hell am I going? Hey, you got a dime more than somebody else. Somebody else may not have nothing, and they got to be grateful for that. This is the spiritual law. Now, I didn't invent the law, but it works because it worked in my life. I don't know anything about electricity. I'm afraid to touch wires. You know, sometimes you hook the blue to this. I don't know nothing about that. I ain't going to hook nothing to nothing, because I'll get a shock. But I'll tell you something. I'm not a genius, nor I'm an electrical engineer. But I can go, what the hell is it? I can go over to the wall and turn the switch, and them lights will go out. Wow, Jimmy did that. All by himself. Turn the switch and the lights went out. I can turn them again and they go back on. Why? Because I'm ignorant of electrical knowledge, but I tapped into the law of electricity. Them wires are hooked up that the switch will work. And now and then, my friends, you will tap into a spiritual concept that will work in your life. But if you don't understand spirituality, you don't understand the magnanimous part of it, that's all you're going to get. is a brief benefit, and that's all. In fact, your own human thinking. Why not? Why not learn all about it? This is sobriety. This is a spiritual program. If it's not one, it wouldn't be working. They tried everything before this. They tried hospitals. They tried, drying you out. They tried mental institutions. They even performed lobotomies on people. And nothing worked until Abby came in Bill's kitchen, and he said religious, and he mentioned he got a good understanding. He was talking spirituality. He hadn't drank in a year. And Bill tried it. And wow, one of the spiritual aspects was working with other drunks, as they called them, passing it on to one another, how I stayed sober today. See, these are spiritual concepts, spiritual law. And after about a year, he said to his wife, Lois, he said, I don't know. He said, all these people I'm talking to, it seems to me they're all back out drinking. And she said, but Bill, you haven't drank in a year. Wow, you see how it works? These things work. If you're ignorant of them, it's your own fault, now that I've explained the fact that they're available. I'm not trying to act like a teacher or a big shot, but I'll tell you something. I have been rescued from one of the worst hurts in the world, in mankind. You know, the most hurting and frustrating things in life is emotional hurt. Did you know that? And how many times every day, so many people in these very rooms that haven't drank in so long walk around consistently hurt emotionally hurt. They have bad experiences with people, with the opposite sex. I see this constantly. And yet every few months they're hooking up with another one of the same caliber, the very same. Why? Because they can't think beyond that? No, because they don't think they deserve anything better than that. And they may not even know this. This is the best I deserve. And so we stay with where we think we can communicate anyway, even though we don't like the treatment we get. And this is what, and this concept can be used in all areas of life and thinking. I have to change in order to change my life. The only way I can change my life is to first change my thinking. If I want a better tomorrow, I can change my thinking today. So my tomorrow's going to be a succession of lousy yesterdays. You figure that one out, but it's the truth. If I want a better tomorrow, I must change my thinking today. You see, right now, my thoughts today are laying groundwork for my future. And if I'm thinking poor, I'm going to have a poor future. Don't say that, poor future. Poor future. But this is so. So anyway, that's gratitude, and that is powerlessness. Now we could ban them two things. We could start having a new and better life, a new and different life. I know, I didn't know. I thought I was having fun. I thought I was getting away with a lot. But I'll tell you something. In 1957, from a solitary confinement cell in an upstate New York penitentiary, I had a dream. I had a dream by the time I left this world, I was going to be a wealthy person. Now, I didn't know at that time that alcohol and or the pursuit of alcohol gave me that penitentiary dilemma. But I do know that in the year 1964, I was worth $52,500, dead or alive. And I did not know at that time that alcohol and or the pursuit of alcohol had put that bounty on my head. I didn't know that. In 1967, in the first few years of a 40-year prison sentence up there in Attica, where they had that infamous riot, I was working in the metal shop in the same block where the riot kicked off. I was working in the metal shop on what they call an outdated punch press machine, making 6 cents a day. That was my prison pay. Do you know a 5-day week gave me 30 cents a week to do anything I wanted with? 30 cents a week, and never once did I realize that alcohol and or the pursuit of alcohol had put me in such a high wage bracket. I did not know that. But I know it today. You see, I didn't think because I was sober every time I went out there at night doing a living without a high school education that that it was really the alcoholic mind that I was following. I had to understand that, and so much fuel. So this was part of it. You know, I never took a drink. Steve mentioned that I was light heavyweight. Well, I won the light heavyweight golden gloves up in New York when I was still in high school. And wow, this was great, because for some reason I never wanted to work. I didn't like that word, and I still don't understand today why I don't like it. But I don't work my program, I practice it. Work would make it difficult. So I thought, wow, this is my out. So I quit school and I started training, and I never drank, and I won the Golden Gloves, and I was headlining all the amateur shows around there in central New York, Pennsylvania, parts of Canada. Wow, I was a real comer, and I was getting a lot of good publicity. And then I was going to turn professional. But around that time, I started drinking alcohol. And I remember the first time I drank, I was with a bunch of guys, and I said, let me try one of them beers. And I had one, and wow, that felt real good. And I had six or seven beers, and I felt really great. The next morning, I got on road work, and boom, I was like a Giselle or a cheetah. I said, wow, this is great. I'm going to incorporate this in my training. And I did, but not because I wanted to, because I had to. You see, I was addicted to alcohol. I was powerless over the first drink. Powerless. And I started drinking, and I started spending more time in the saloons than I did in the gymnasiums. Then I got maybe one of the worst feelings in my life, beyond the headaches and heartaches and hangovers of alcoholism. I sometimes started losing the people I knew I could beat, and never blamed it on the booze, but blamed it on a lot of different things. Like I wasn't eating right, I just wasn't training properly or whatever. And I'm realizing that alcohol was the cause. And that's when the underworld figure saw me, and they thought I'd be a big asset to them to go out and pick up some of this money they were loaning out. And some people kind of were reluctant to pay. And so this guy's like a little champion here. He can go out and get it. And I did, and I was very successful at it, and I had a new career. And the promoters were backing off me anyway because of the drinking. But anyway, you know, this type of thinking, you know, you can say this type of living, but I can't live it till first I think it. You can't do anything in life till first you think it. Did you know that? That's why we must think, change our thinking. I can't ring this bell until first I think about it. See, I thought about it first. Nobody can come and ring it unless they think about it first. Unless you accidentally lean on something, like I did my sunglasses in the car today and cracked them. Everything's made of plastic today. You know, you gotta go buy another pair and take glue that plastic thing. Then people are thinking how to get your money. So we have to think about it first. If this doesn't make sense to you, then I'm sorry, my friend. But always remember this, that the body is a servant of the mind. I can't do anything unless I think about it first. And neither can you. Nobody is in here tonight, but only as a result of their own thinking. Always remember that. And whatever you do, if you go for another cup of coffee, if you just put your arm over the back of the chair, you think about it first. I can't pick up a drink of alcohol unless I think about it first. Now, if I retain the alcoholic mind, the sick mind that brought me here, that's going to be passing on my mind, and the alcohol is always going to look good to me. But when I get on a spiritual plane or a spiritual level, did you know this? When you get on a spiritual level, on a spiritual plane, the thought of a drink, of taking a drink of alcohol is not on that plane. It's not on there. It's not that I just don't have to worry about it. I have to stay on that spiritual plane. I have to stay where I'm at by constantly growing spiritually. Or my mind will go back to once it was that I came in here with. I'll go back to the mind that I prayed to get away from. And I don't want to go back to that. And if someone doesn't care, then we know why we're having days like they're having, and I'm having exciting days like I'm having. There is a difference. So when we go spiritually, we elevate ourselves. Not that I'm better than anybody here, but I'm a lot different. And I said a lot of times at a meeting, I said, I don't think I've everybody in these rooms, and for that I'm eternally grateful. But right now, every one of you can look at me and say, you don't think like I do, for that you're eternally grateful. I mean, I know it can work either way, but what gives me a good day every day, an exciting day every day, I am now a victor over life rather than a victim of it, is simply my spiritual growth. And that is AA. That is how we live. A day at a time, absent of a drink, not drinking a day at a time, in absence of inner turmoil. If you want it, it's here. If you don't want it, well, then, you know, just keep fighting the thought of a drink and the urge and getting angry, resentful, and pitiful, and down and out. I mean, somebody says, well, you know, I've even heard the statement where somebody thought I was, you know, a spiritual goof. I know that, and someone in this room right now might be calling me a spiritual goof. Well, what's the difference? You see, what used to pierce me like a sword now just hits me like a dull club. That's spiritual protection. It really is. And I'm not saying I don't care what you think about me, but think what you want. I can probably have a few thoughts myself too, but these are good thoughts. Because I know I came in here angry, depressed. I came in here with a lot of resentment and a lot of guilt. And I know how all that is. If I didn't come in here that way, I wouldn't know how good it feels not to feel that way. So now that I feel better, what I'm doing tonight is expressing myself and passing on the fact that in sobriety, we do not have to hurt anymore. We don't have to suffer emotionally. We don't have to be afraid to wake up in the morning. I used to wake up in the morning and with a human alcoholic mind, and somebody would say, Jimmy, you gonna have a good day today? And I'd say, I don't know, I gotta wait and see what happens. Well, really, if good things happen, I have a good day. If poor things happen, I have a poor day. Which means I was a victim of the day. I was a victim of the circumstances. Are you still a victim of the circumstances? You still wake up and wonder if something good is going to happen, if something poor is going to happen? Well, when you become spiritually sound, my friend, when you get spiritual fulfillment, spiritual embodiment, when you wake up in the morning, you already know that you're going to be a victor over that day and not a victim of it. And isn't that great? Isn't that powerful? Let me tell you a real powerful spiritual statement. And this is living inside of me right now. Those of you in this room that I know and those of you that I don't know personally, I'm going to tell you something. There isn't any one of you in this room that cannot add to my life. But I'll tell you also, there isn't anyone in this room that can take from me. And that's what's important. Nobody can take from me my good feelings and my good emotions and my spiritual strength and my spiritual embodiment and my spiritual boldness. Yes, we get bold in spirituality. Not cocky, not wise, but bold. And that's one of the greatest attractions, you know, to the fact that, wow, things bounce off that guy like incredible. And that's the way it should be. So, I just lost 50-some pounds. And I got a diet that'll work for everybody. They call it chemo and radiation. Wow! You can shed that weight in a hurry. And I'll tell you something. I had 3 operations, and they went in there. But I told them doctors from the very beginning I was healed. And they said, no, the x-ray's this, no, I'm healed. Never once from the very beginning when they used that C word, cancer, in spiritual fulfillment, listen to this. This is the truth. When you're spiritual, it scuffs on listen to this. But anyway, I said, when they told me that you got cancer in the colon and this and that, and never once, which was a few weeks before Christmas last, and they said they had to operate, and they opened me up and they had to close me up because it was adhered to the screen. Never once, believe me when I tell you, because of spiritual fulfillment, did I get that much of a butterfly in my stomach of worry. Never once. I was so bold and confident that I said, no, I'm healed. Not that I'm going to be healed. Not that I'm being healed. I am healed. My God says, I am healed. I said, I am healed. I am healed. Well, they had to go back in, and the second time I was open for 11 hours. That's phenomenal. And they said, if my vital signs and my heart were so good, they said, it closed me up again. And they had to scrape the spleen, as they call it. And be careful not to hit certain veins, for the thing. Broke one, I would die on the operating table. And then they come out, and then they found something, what they thought was something else. They gave me a third operation. And in between them, I'm this chemo and radiation, I can't eat them. You know, I'm vomiting. That stuff is brutal, wow. But I kept believing that I was healed, that I was healed, that I was healed. Every day I praise my God for my healing. And then they went in, they found something and they thought it was cancerous, and they cut that out, and they sent it away, and they came back negative. And then after that, they said, we're going to give you 11 more treatments of cancer and radiation because there might be something microscopic in there. And they did that, and I went through that. And I lost 50-some pounds. 50-some pounds. Right now, well, you know, I couldn't hold my cane. I dropped it twice. I don't have any strength in my system. A little more than I had about 3 weeks ago. But I've gained back 14 pounds already. There's nothing in there. They can't find anything anymore. And I told them, I said that from the beginning. They didn't believe me. I said, there's nothing in there. I'm starting to eat again. That's why the crowd's going to take me to dinner. Boy, I'm going to knock him out. Spaghetti warehouse. I have noodles coming out my ears. But you know what? I am healed. We're not only talking about physical healing. I remember my mind that I brought into these AA rooms. It's a sick, sad, sorry, sucker way of thinking. Now I am healed. I got a lot of growing to do, you see, because mentally, we can never stop growth. It's out there, you know. It's like the Kimberly diamond mines. When they started, they found diamonds on the surface. They had more than they thought they could ever use in a lifetime. And they kept digging and there was more. And they kept digging and there was more. And that's what spiritual growth is. There's no end to it. It's dynamic and it's powerful and it's exciting. I was the most, probably, the weakest, sickest sucker, closest to death in that hospital. I left the Veterans Hospital. And let me tell you something. I was the most cheerful guy in the room. When I could talk. Sometimes I could hardly talk. But when I did, you know, I was cheering up the nurses and the doctors, and I just felt good about it. It's just natural. It just bubbles over inside of you. You feel dynamic and powerful and exciting, no matter what happens. Do you want is inside me? You can't see it or feel it, but I think the doctors saw it on the x-rays. They didn't tell me, but I know they picked up on it. Inside me, a spiritual pilot light. It gives a warm glow inside me all the time. That's what spirituality does to you. It keeps you warm and confident. I may not always like the circumstances of the day. I'm not saying, but I don't have things happen in my life that are kind of devastating. But what spirituality is, that fire like that warm glow, is a feeling of confidence that you will always get through it. And there's never the thought of a drink. Never the thought of after we've taken a drink. There's no anger, there's no resentment, there's no pity, there's no guilt. You can insult the hell out of me, and all you do is tell me something about yourself. Same as if I did to you. Always remember that. People can get angry and storm around and go and kick tables and break dishes. All you're doing is telling you something about yourself. You can't handle it. You can't handle life. The complainers in life are those that are, you know, just can't handle it. Never grew up. You find out what the immature mind is. Can you imagine somebody being 30, 40, 50 years old and still getting angry and resentful and pitiful and guilty? They never outgrew it. You tell those kids, don't argue with your sister, it's wrong. And then tell your husband, get out of here, you son of a bitch. I mean, I used to hear, look, you're too young to smoke. You're too young to ruin your life. You got to wait till you're older. What do you doubt when you're 2 or 9 years? You're too young to drink. I didn't drink. I drank beer at first. I drank bottles of beer. You know, I was a prize fighter. I went to school and people would buy me beers. I think you lined up with soldiers. I had all these beers. And one guy said to me, he said, Jimmy, he said, that beer bloats you. He said, drinks what I'm drinking. I'm going to give you scotch and sodas. So I started drinking scotch and soda when I could afford it. And when, I didn't think he had many cents to me anymore. But anyway, he's right. I wasn't feeling so bloated and this and that and it was going on. 2 years later, a guy says to me, no, he says, this is the alcoholic mind. He says, no, Jimmy, I always see you drinking that scotch and soda. I said, yeah. He said, well, don't you know what that'll do to you? I says, what do you mean? He says, that's soda. Leak the lining out of your stomach. Soda. Well, I blamed him at the time. I tried scotch and water. Now I couldn't get used to it. I went back to soda. And every time I drank one, I used to think about, I'm eating the lining out of my stomach. The scotch had nothing to do with it. I guess I'm in here because of the soda. The guy that said to me, would you drink Kool-Aid if Kool-Aid did you, what alcohol did? And I says, well, no, unless I could get high from it. You see, unless you got high. Horrors. I said, there'd be Kool-Aid tonight. But the thing is it was the alcohol. It was the feeling I drank for effect, for the effect it gave me. What do I care if some gorgeous broad was sitting next to me or not? As long as I had the booze, that's what's important. Then what comes after that is something else. But I want the beer, the whiskey first. And so that was the polish to sober and the drinking for effect. And we have to remember that. But I remember 1964 because of my new way of life. Well, I had a safe conviction in Wayne County, and I had I got an old bill at the grand jury a year or so later in Rochester, New York. That's trying to leave a jewelry store if it's valuable. And safe cracking, as they call it. That's when you take money out of a safe that doesn't belong to you. And the state police found on that because it was right across the highway from their barracks. And I thought it would be the last place they'd look. I didn't know I was alcoholic. I didn't know I was powerless, man. It was a hot day in September, and I was thirsty, went to a school, and I only had about that much out of a bottle of beer, and I had that familiar buzz on. I thought I would take a case of beer to get me high, because I hadn't drank it so long. But all the time I laid up in that jail cell, the progression of alcoholism was going on in my system, the same as yours right now and mine. I've been 27 years without a drink. But if I took one drink, it isn't that Jimmy took a drink. He was drinking again, but that progression was gripping me. I'll be right back out here, and we have to remember. But in 1964, I got extradited on my honeymoon from Baltimore, Maryland, and that don't make for the start of a good marriage. My wife was upset, but she shouldn't have to be, because she knew I told her I wasn't 9 to 5. She knew I was a hood. She knew, really did. I mean, I want to marry anyway. They're going to change, you see. Change. So she thought she was going to change me. Right, the mother-in-law tried. First Christmas I was married, you know what the mother-in-law gave me for Christmas? What an insult. I opened the package, I said, geez, I can't believe your mother gave me a present. Opened it up with a brand new lunch pitter. With a famous style. Yeah. I said, Sal, what's this? You know what that is. I says, geez, I told you. You know, I don't cook. But I work nights. I used to go out nights, go to work, you know, in underworld activities, risk years of my life to come home and have to accuse my wife. I said, you're blowing this money. I go out and risk years of my life. I said, you're blowing this money on things like rent and groceries. What the hell's wrong with you? But she didn't understand. Until I got to 40 years. Well, 1964, that was quite a year. I got indicted in Chicago County on 9 counts of forgery. And the state's attorney jumps in and says, this guy ain't writing checks or passing them, but he's heading a statewide forgery here, and we got to shut him down. Well, I made bail and went into the saloons, and I got indicted in 1964 in Onondaga County. That's where Syracuse is. 54 counts of forgery. And the judge gave me bail, and I went back in the saloons, and I got indicted in 1964 in accessory to robbery in the first degree. And I made bail and went back in the saloons, and I got indicted in 1964 in robbery in the first degree. And now the bonding company thought I was becoming a risk. And the judge did too, because he set an impossible bail. And I was lodged in the new public safety building for one of the first tenants. We had a one-room apartment there, cold water flat. But you know what? In the summer of 1964, I got indicted by the federal government on a $450,000 coastal money order swindle, and this judge set no bail. Now I got a federal charge with the other. And this is all in 1 year. And I never realized it was alcohol, like I say, in the pursuit of alcohol. But after about a year, we went to trial in the Rodney Round, and I got convicted and sentenced to 40 years in Attica prison. And I changed my life in prison, not because I had a problem. You know, I've been in the penitentiaries and in the jail houses before that, and my problem was I could do time. I mean, I didn't want to be in there, but normally I was there, you know, just as relaxed and humorous and whatever. I didn't want to be there, but I could do time. And the fact that bothered me is I could do time. That's what bothered me. So I'm up in Attica and I started my time and I transferred down to Northern Prison. But I changed my life because I came to look at myself and realize that this wasn't right. But I never realized it was alcohol. But when I changed my thinking, the miracle started to happen. After the Attica riot, they come and told me that instead of doing 13 years and 9 months to see the parole board, I only had to do 8 years and 4 months. And I went to the parole board knowing I'd beat them out of some time on a modification, and I had other indictments waiting for me that I would never get out. They'd say, give us another year, but they told me to go home. Miracle number 2, changed my thinking. And now when I get out of the prison, I'm waiting for the state or the federal, you know, these indictments to pick me up, fight over me, who's going to get me, but nobody was there but my brother-in-law and my brother and my friend Joey, who owned the bar. And not knowing alcohol was my problem. But there's 3 miracles that changed my thinking. You want miracles to start in your life? They can immediately, right away, start changing your thinking. The same mind is going to break if you want. Jeez, can't you understand that? And anyway, then I came out and I went into this AA program after about a year of constant drinking. When I got in AA, God knew my heart and knew I was sincere. The parole called me up and said, I owe 31 years on parole. He said, give us 5 good years and there's a mandatory that you can get off parole. Possible. I gave him 5 good years. I didn't try to get off parole. I just practiced my program and accommodated parole. And after 5 years, I was released from parole. It's incredible. These are miracles. If you don't believe in miracles, my friends, it's going to be hard for you to be attracted to them and then be attracted to you. I believe so powerful, just like I told the doctors, I'm okay, I'm healed. And just got to believe, and that's the spiritual concept. You can't do it unless you get a spiritual life. It's just like the guy told me once, Jimmy, as soon as I straighten out my life, I'm going to turn to God. And I said, well, my friend, you can't straighten out your life until first you turn to God. See, and I couldn't think that. I remember several times I thought, well, once I get myself together, I'm going to quit this damn drinking. But I couldn't quit drinking. I had to come in here and learn how to refrain a day at a time. And that was so important. But you know, there's so much I'd like to say, and I'm just starting to get warmed up, even though they took my cane away from me. And they can't ring the bell because I got it. I'm not going to ring it because I'm not going to think about ringing it. But just take a couple minutes over. I was in B Block, in Auburn Prison. And I was clerk in B Block. I couldn't type well when they offered me a job, but that's what us guys do. We didn't these plush jobs. This would pay 10 cents a day. A 4-cent raise, I want to turn that down? I started typing like this. I had to type the count every day. And you know what? I had that job for 6 years, the longest I ever held a job. I heard a guy tell me once in this program, he says, you know, Jimmy, alcohol is the curse of the working man. And I said, no, work's the curse of the drinking man. I couldn't work when I'm drinking. Who wants to even try? But here I am, I'm not drinking in the joint, and I got 6 years of showing up every day. Well, I had to show up. Wasn't it something? But when I started changing my thinking, what I did, I started reading what I called a progressive or some books that were sort of, you know, I didn't read all the nonsense. I always like to watch a good Western on TV. You don't see them anymore like they used to. But now and then, but I would read about people who were successes, who made it in life. And I remember I read about salespeople. You read about successful salesmen. And you'll find they always talk about a touch of spirituality. I read about Bernard Baruch. I read about advisors to presidents. And I read about different people like that too. We all talked about a certain measure of spirituality. And I read this book called The Agony and the Ecstasy. And they made a movie on it long after I got out of prison. But one of the things I picked up on it was remarkable. It was a story of Michelangelo. And we know Michelangelo painted that Sistine Chapel. Unbelievable. But did you know, only genius could do what he did. But did you know that he didn't like to paint and he didn't want to paint, but the Pope was the commissioner in them days. He commissioned him to do it, and he had to do it. He loved the sculpt. He loved marble. And Michelangelo once said that marble was his mistress. He loved to rub his hands over it, and it was incredible how he loved this marble. And one day the Pope commissioned him to do the statue of David, and Michelangelo did this statue. He had this piece of marble taken out of the mountain, and it had a flaw in it. But he said, I can work around that flaw. And David, that he did, was standing. Remember, David killed Goliath with the slingshot? And I wouldn't think of trying that. This guy was a giant. But David, the statue had David standing either this way or this way. I'm left-handed. But he had the slingshot over his shoulder. And my friend Jojo went over to Florence, Italy, and he saw the statue. And you wonder what makes these people geniuses. If you see a photo of this, look close to what I'm going to tell you about it, and you might see it, but the photos don't show it. He says, you've got to see the marble, Jimmy. On this side where Michelangelo is leaning on his weight, you can see the tenseness in his body, the tenseness in marble. It's incredible. And on this side, you can see relaxation in the muscle. You can see relaxation in marble. The guy, that's what made him geniuses. People could see that. Tenseness on one side, relaxation on the other, in marble. Wow. When they unveiled it in the courtyard, and all the Romans and centurions and the popes and everybody was there, and everybody marveled over it, and they said to Michelangelo, how did you ever carve such a beautiful piece of work out of that marble? And he said, I didn't. They said, you didn't? And he said, no. He said, that statue, well, no, he said, we saw you do it. Some of us watched you. We know the Pope commissioned you. He said, no, that statue, as you see it, was always in that piece of marble. I just chipped away and chipped away and chipped away until I got to it. Then I polished it and refined it. And there's that beautiful piece of work. And remember this, all the wonders we seek in life are already inside us. Every good emotion and feeling and idea and suggestion you would ever want is already inside you. But we don't know that. We're programmed, 6 o'clock news, we're programmed in negative. We're programmed that if some guy talks about you, you got a right to get a resentment and anger, or even believe it. We're programmed for that. So the negatives are what keeps all these good feelings and emotions. See, God would not make us where we had to go out and search the neighborhood, or search the county for happiness, or go to some other a place in life to be happy. Would that be a fair God? No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't. Because I'm going to tell you something. I've often said if happiness floated by in a crowd, all us tall guys would have cornered the market on happiness. Some shorter people wouldn't get it. It wouldn't be fair. God has already put it inside us, but it's not really happiness. It's to call inner joy, inner peace. That's what spirituality gives you. Inner peace, inner joy, the pilot light, the nice warm glow, the nice good feeling. It's inside each and every one of them. But no, I got a right to be angry. I got a right to be resentful. I'm so sad. I'm so pitiful. I'm so guilty. Well, that's the mind I'm talking about that we have to do this. To take on the spiritual mind, a powerful, dynamic, exciting, abundant mind of sobriety. That's what sobriety is. How do you do it? Well, in a sense, my friend, you can do what Michelangelo did. Just kind of start chipping away at that negative. Chip away and chip away and chip away. Until you get to that beautiful, powerful, dynamic, sober you that's already inside you. Just polish it and refine it. Please believe me, every one of us can have a good day, every day. Thank you.